We're in this series that we started this new year. You know, we kick off every new year saying Happy New Year to each other. Are you still saying that? It can kind of last all through January, right? Because you see somebody you haven't seen yet in the new year, and it's Happy New Year. But we're rethinking happiness because a lot of us are, it's hard to feel the happiness that God wants us to feel on a consistent basis. And why is that? And what makes us happy? We're asking all these questions and really looking into some things that Jesus said that might kind of turn our view of happiness upside down. I still, anytime I see a silver charger, Challenger driving around, that ongoing debate between the Dodge Charger or Challenger. I'm a Challenger guy, and so I just go, boy, I think my life would just be a lot happier behind a dump, you know, driving it. But whatever, you know, we tend to get drawn to that if we could just escape into that or just have that, or, you know, that maybe, you know, that would make us feel better. That would solve some problems. And it's easy to fall into that trap. But Jesus gives us incredible, it's a 3-chapter sermon, the most famous sermon in human history, called the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. But he has this opening. And if you've ever given a talk, you know, like it was fun. Last week, Ken shared on this topic and always does an awesome job. I've heard Blaine speak before, and she's an amazing speaker. And if you've ever done a talk, you're always looking for an opening. You know, it's like, what's a good attention getter? You know, something that's, you know, going to captivate your audience. And Jesus opens with these 8 short lines to, you know, he's got to somehow get the attention of this rabble that's just followed him, you know, up this hillside. And he's got to somehow quiet these guys down. He doesn't have any amplification here. You know, he's just got to use the, you know, what he has. And what he starts off with is such a way that he just turns everything upside down. And I love this quote. We've been kind of just doing a little bit of a review here. We talked about this in the first week. But the opening of the sermon was meant to shock the audience. It was a deliberate inversion of standard values. And I love it. Some guy built a house. There's a few of these around. If you ever go online, people build these upside down houses. I mean, so you can like go in it and stuff. But it's upside down looking on the outside. Anyway, kind of funny. But he starts off this amazing talk talking crazy, talking about how your life is going to be so blessed if you experience these things that most of us in our right minds do our best to avoid as best as we can. And so, but he uses this word, blessed, that sometimes gets translated in your Bibles as blissful, maybe as fortunate, enriched, satisfied. There's, if you look around different Bible translations, you see all these different ones. If you grew up with the NIV, you've probably seen the word blessed most of the time in this little passage. But probably the most literal translation, what people heard, is closest to our word in our language, as simple as happy. This is what Jesus was saying, was you're going to be happy. Happy are these kinds of people. Happy are these lifestyles. And that's how each sentence started off, but each sentence ends up with these words that what can you possibly be talking about, Jesus? And so let me read to you the passage, and I haven't done this yet in the series, but in that translation that where you hear, instead of hearing blessed, because that's sort of a churchy religious word now. But it wasn't back then. It was just the word for being happy. But this is what Jesus is trying to tell us. Happy are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Happy are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Ken got us a lot closer to that thought last week. Happy are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. What does that even mean? Happy are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. You get to hear Denise talk about that one next Sunday, by the way, which will be a special treat. Happy are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Happy are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Happy are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Happy are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for, okay, I'm just like, I'm either going to walk away at this point, or I'm going to go, maybe there's something to this. And so we're spending, you know, a Sunday on each of these crazy little phrases that God is saying, no, no, no. You're going in the wrong direction with the travel and the cars and the stuff. I mean, those are just little tricks that trick you into these little fleeting moments of escape, but not happiness, not joy, not real fulfilling lives. So, but just as a visual, I just want you to stare at that a little bit. We're going to focus on whatever meat means today. But just to associate those phrases with our happiness is such a healthy exercise for us. Just to look up there and see if I can incorporate some of that into my life, my mood is actually going to change for the better. But it's not necessarily going to be this overnight thing, because Jesus was not into quick fixes. He's into our lives for the long haul. And probably the best way to think about the kind of change that God is after in our lives is a sort of long-term. You know, and Jesus talks a lot about sowing and reaping, you know, and most of the time he's talking, you know, he's in a very agricultural culture. And so he's using a lot of those, you know, a lot of those types of metaphors. And so, you know, it takes a while to cultivate a field. Just, you know, you gardeners know that it takes a while to till the soil the right way and prepare it before you've even done anything, before you've even planted a seed, and then you got to plant that seed, and then it takes a while for the right elements to come together and for that seed to germinate and to start growing, and then it takes a long time for it to grow and then finally bear some fruit to be harvested, to be reaped. And so, but if we hang in there and we sow some seeds in this direction, this is what's going to change our life. And so this is what's going to be behind experiencing what in the world our happiness can do with being meek. Okay, so I know you're all giggling right now, and you're all going right back to that Monty Python scene. And so everybody's with me, right? Remember Life of Brian? Okay, the first R-rated movie I ever saw, by the way. My dad takes me and my brother, we're like in middle school, you know, and there's language and imagery and stuff like that. And okay, I mentioned that, you know, I got a little bit of a Middle Eastern background, you know, and I knew the Bible story enough to know that it was in a Middle Eastern setting. And I'm like, Dad, these guys aren't even trying. They all like have English accents, you know? And so he's like trying to explain it. It's a comedy. Anyway, but there's this, you know, scene, you know, the crowd, you know, a few people at the back of the crowd, kind of on the fringes that couldn't get close enough. And they're having a hard time hearing what Jesus is saying. And, you know, they get peacemakers mixed up with cheesemakers and things like that. And they can't, you know, blessed are the blessed are the meek. And John Cleese's character storms away with his little, you know, rebellious movement group that's, you know, was hoping Jesus might be helpful in rebelling against the Romans, but now obviously he's not, because what Jesus fails to realize is that the meek are the problem, you know. And so and he misunderstands. I mean, obviously, you know, Monty Python's having a little fun with that that scene. But most of us misunderstand, just like their little group, what meek even means. You know, they're not these You know, it's not the doormats. It's not letting yourself get walked on. It was a really interesting word that was used, praeus, which is defined as the right or the power to do something, but refraining for the benefit of someone else. Let me blow this other one up. Okay, this is from Strong's. It expands a little more. It is not suggesting weakness, but instead the way power is handled. It is strength under control. It is demonstrating power without undue harshness. The English language does not have a word that translates conveying both gentleness and power together. It's a really cool word. In fact, we see this idea, this concept used just so much in who Jesus is and how, I mean, the one person with so much power didn't use it except for coming in a way that was going to benefit all of us. And this little passage out of Philippians 2 explains this so well. In your relationships with one another, the Apostle Paul is talking, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. Now, I know that sounds, of course, that's, Jesus and he would do that. But what's the next closest thing we've got to seeing, that exhibited in our culture? And so, okay, Raiders fans, forgive me. I know you guys are going to get mad. But, okay, our buddy Tom Brady, who just pulled it off again. All right, so you either get excited about Tom, or you get, Denise, my wife, had never really, I was kind of showing her an interview with Tom Brady, and goes, wow, is he really that good looking? And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess he is. But here's, so the most Super Bowls, all the quarterback stuff, the most famous athlete, in the world, and the best quarterback to ever play the game, even surpassed Joe Montana's accomplishments. I saw an interview with Brady a couple years ago. And so here's the guy that's got all the accolades, all the prestige, all the awards, all the power. He's probably the best definition of meekness. Okay, so what if the Patriots didn't pull it off today? I actually got a backup slide of Blake Bortles. I don't have to use that. So, but here's the great thing about Tom Brady. He's he's got it all going for him. Yet every Monday morning when he goes into the quarterback's room, in the team meetings and stuff to review film with the coaching staff and the whole team. Any little mistake, any misread, any misthrow, any misfire, anything like that, and he'll get ripped by this guy. So Bill Belichick, the head coach of the Patriots, treats Brady like he's any one of the guys. And you know who's just perfectly fine with that? Is Brady. And so he takes it, because what's so cool about his demeanor and his personality is he doesn't want to rest on his accolades. He wants to grow. He is open to, the constructive criticism. He's coachable. And I would say that's probably the closest, to really understanding, a part of what it means to be meek is, are you coachable? Are you tameable? In the Hebrew word for it has to do with kind of holding horses back. It's this idea of tameable power. And so are you open to being tamed? Are you coachable? Are you malleable? And so I just wanted to get that. I don't know. I guess I've been watching a lot of football today. And so had Brady on my mind. But even before this Sunday, anytime I'd ever have to explain what meek really means, that's who I think of. Because here's somebody, because it spreads out into the whole team. Man, if Tom will take that from Belichick, I guess I have to, you know? I'm just one of the guards, or you know, I'm a lineman, or I'm a defensive back. It's like that's the all-star quarterback, you know, and so he's not above it. And how cool is that, you know, that he doesn't use his star power. He's willing to be one of the guys for the benefit of the whole team and all our success. And that permeates everything. When you can carry yourself like that. Okay, so I don't have to use the Blake Bortles one. I'll just skip right through that. So you don't even know who Blake Bortles is. That's the point. Where did this guy come from this year? So anyway. So, but I just kind of want to explore three areas of maybe how we can incorporate into our life this aspect of what Jesus is talking about being meek. Because here's the thing about the meek. And they're usually very content, happy. They know who they are and what they stand for, and they're secure in that. And there's some things that they just don't need. They don't need to always be right. They don't mind somebody, coming up with something better than them. They don't have to have their way all the time. And they actually really enjoy sharing the credit with others. So let's dig in a little bit, because the meek are happy. Because, and I think this is really when Jesus talks about they'll inherit the earth. He's not talking about they're going to get a bunch of land. But when he does say they're going to inherit the earth, he's talking to mostly, you know, people in that crowd that really can't expect any sort of a sizable inheritance coming. You know, they're not experiencing generational wealth that's being passed down from one generation in the family to another. What do they got coming to them? Jesus, do we have anything coming to us? And Jesus says, yes, you're gonna inherit a whole world of happiness. Because you're going to make those around you happy. Because if you've ever been around a meek person, most of you guys know Denise pretty well, my wife. I mean, she's just like textbook. I went with the Tom Brady thing just because of the game today. And so otherwise I'd be talking about her. But I mean, she just makes everybody around her happy. And so that is the amazing thing about people with that attribute, is it's contagious, and you become happy because now you're surrounded by people that you've made happy. And it's this wonderful little cycle, and you inherit a world that is just plain happier. So let's kind of flesh out some of these attributes. Have you ever been around somebody that just always has to be right? Oh, you ever worked with somebody like that? You ever worked for somebody like that? Well, you know, the New Testament flips that upside down when Paul says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves." And that applies to where we work, where we live, our families, our neighbors, because if you've ever been around, don't raise your hand, because we might know who you worked with or worked for. But did you ever have one of these personalities in your life? I love this line. Don't you think that if I were wrong, I'd know it? I mean, and so you gotta love Sheldon, but you're not necessarily going to enjoy being around a personality like that. And if that's a struggle in your personality, and you're kind of maybe wondering, you know, why do people walk on eggshells around you sometimes? That's one of those things that's just hard for people to, you know, it's just no fun being around somebody that always thinks they're right. Now, here's the truth. Most everybody here, you guys are all very talented, sharp individuals that I would put my money on you being right most of the time in your workplace, in your relationships. You're smart, sensitive, caring, thoughtful people. But sometimes you just have to let go. Even when somebody, you don't, and if you've ever been in a leadership position, whether at work or, I mean, in you know, volunteering in your kids' sports leagues or, you know, anywhere, when you're wanting someone else around you to kind of grow into a certain role and maybe take over something you've been doing, you've got to let them shine, even though you probably know a better way to handle something. And so you don't always have to be right, because when you're looking over somebody's shoulder and correcting them all the time, they're not going to flourish. And they're not going to be, you know, confident and just not happy. But when you can send the message that your way, your idea is just as good, you know what's better? And if you can go out of your way, and I remember I had a boss, I've had both extremes on this. I've had the guy that would never admit in the face of absolute failure that there was anything that needed to be reconsidered about anything. And it was just like, you know, everybody that worked around that, you know, it was just like, it was just a miserable place to be. But then there's the boss that I remember working for. I think I've probably mentioned him over. Have I ever mentioned Lloyd Neal? I remember being in college and he was this construction superintendent on this job I was assigned to and as a summer job. And here was one of the top guys in Kiewit Construction. And here I'm a summer intern. I'm an absolute nobody. And he would make a point to ask my opinion on stuff. And I mean, are you kidding? I mean, I came up with a little bit of a, well, what if we did this? And he's all, okay, did you guys hear what Rich said? Let's, you know, and everyone's all, who's Rich? Just like, you know. Let's start using blue. I mean, this is totally dumb, but grade stakes. You know that the construction equipment can see. Never mind. I just thought blue was easier to see than red when you're out there. You know, and you could actually. And he's like, let's go with blue. I like that better. And I'm just like, you know, I just wanted. I would do anything for this guy all summer. And it just made, and I mean, the reality of it was I had the bonehead, you know, grunt work, intern stuff that nobody's going to really get excited about. But because of Lloyd Neal, who, you know, inspired, you know, everybody to, you know, work as hard as they could, and they felt part of, you felt part of a team. And so it just made everything better. You felt happy, even though you were maybe digging a ditch for just some, you know, random runoff drainage stuff. And it's like, I'm doing it for Lloyd, you know, and I'm on Lloyd's team. How cool is that? And so the meek make other people happy because they don't always need to be right. But there's another part of it too. The meek don't need to do everything their way. And I love this passage in Romans 15. I'm going to try to break it down. Yeah. Oh, I'm seeing it changing on here. Sorry. Okay, so how many of you guys had relatives over for Christmas dinner last Christmas season? Oops, hit the wrong button. Some of our relatives aren't the funnest to sit down and enjoy a holiday meal with. Well, think about how tough that would have had to be back in the first century church. And you got people that are used to eating a certain way having to dine with now all these Gentiles, you know, that just are gross to hang out with, you know, for, you know, they're sacrificing the idols and eating meat with blood in it. Blech. Anyway, Paul's got to spend a couple chapters in Romans trying to get everybody to play nice together. And so this, and let me explain this passage here. He's saying, okay, we who are strong, and what he's saying is like, okay, we just don't believe in all the myths and fairy tales and things like that. We've grown up with the Bible, you know, with the Mosaic law. We get there's one God, and we're not superstitious about all these many gods. But okay, you're running up against people now that are just coming out of these traditions, and they've got a little baggage, and they've got to grow. It's going to take some time for them to grow out of it. We've got to be considerate of those who are sensitive about things like this. And we must not just please ourselves, for even Christ didn't leave to please himself. And he's basically just talking about different kinds of traditions that people are used to. And most of the times these would show up in, like, you know, dinner, you know, feasting together. And back in the, it's kind of like how we have our once a month potlucks, you know. Back then, church was always followed by a meal. You ate together as a church on a regular basis. So if you had different ways of, you know, sitting down to the meal, you know, it could get a little messy. But this principle of, okay, I agree with you guys, our way is the best way to approach it. But you know what? We're going to have to let that go. We're just going to, because we need to open this relation, this opportunity for a relationship with God wide open to everybody now. It's not just about being part of Judaism. This is for everybody. And it's going to get a little messy. But that's okay. It's going to be an adventure. And so just go with it. And don't feel like we've got to stick to all the rules or traditions or the way we're used to it. I love this little, I came across this. I don't know if you can read this. Let me read it to you. This little Dilbert cartoon. You know, he walks into one of the offices. Can you email the test data to me? And she goes, well, we don't do it that way. And he goes, well, that's not a reason. We never give reasons. Nothing you say means anything. She goes, that's how we've always done it. You know, and just because there's a way that you're comfortable with doesn't mean that that's always the way that's going to be best. Even when, okay, we know that's, you know, that's a good way and it's always worked for us. We're trying to expand the circle here a little bit. We've got to open ourselves up a little bit if we're going to create a fellowship and learn how to get along better with more and more. So if you've ever been around somebody that, you know, is happy to flex and change things up, you know, I mean, that's a meek personality. They're not set in their ways. They're not stuck in, well, this is how we always do Christmas. You know, and it's like, okay, you know, and so you are going to inject happiness into the lives of others when you flex. Because, and it doesn't mean, and this is the tricky part with being a Christian. It's like, does that mean I let everybody run over my life, you know, and I never get to have my way? It might seem like that, but you hang in there and you'll see how your selfless love now starts to make a difference in lives around you. And you find that some of the reasons other people might have to hold on to their things is they're just not happy. But when they're around a happy person like you're becoming, they're going to get happier, and now they're going to start flexing. But you're going to have caused that because you're letting God shape you into something more. But the meek don't need to do everything their way. The meek don't need to take all the credit. Jesus just, I mean, he does this. I mean, here's somebody that, okay, has all the authority and power to do everything. And even Jesus deflects that. Truly, I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. And you just know he's fibbing here to make you feel better. I mean, you know, it's like, he's not. It just, it's like, are you kidding? You're God incarnate. No, he can only do what he sees his Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. Even he is being assisted by the Father, and he's showing actually that's the best way to do it. The best way is to lean on help. But he could have taken all the credit many times in his life, and he never does. Even when he puts to rest a little squabble amongst the disciples and how they're positioning themselves, you know, with, you know, who's going to be first, and he goes, I don't look at it that way. Even the Son of Man came to serve and not to be served. Do you guys know what this is? Do you know what this is? What's that? It's not a soccer ball. It's a futsal ball. Totally different. I know it looks like a soccer ball. It's soccer played on a basketball court. But it's weird. It's smaller and it's denser. I mean, like, it doesn't bounce. I mean, you try to bounce, it just kind of gets thud. And so I'm coaching my youngest futsal, her team here through the winter, and so, which is great, because I've been kind of sidelined as a parent this year, and I'm not the coach, and it's brutal. I gotta like keep my mouth shut, I can't yell, I can't direct the game, and it's really painful for me because I just want to control everything that happens on the field. So now I'm the coach, I can like tell them, you know, and say everything and do things the way I want. But something I noticed they weren't doing after a kid scores a goal that was just ingrained into me when I was a kid, the first thing you do, and I'm also, what's the first thing you do when you score a goal? You know, they go into like fist pumps and different dances, and I'm, no. The first thing you do when you score a goal is you find the last person that on your team that touched the ball before you, and you go thank them. Because they assisted you one way or another in that goal happening. And you know what you do when they come and thank you? You go thank the person that touched it before it got to you. You see how far through the team you can go with that. And so, because you would never get that goal if somebody else wasn't involved. And it's so good for you guys to learn that every goal is a team effort and to share the credit. And it's so cute, I mean, because these are the things that make us happy. I mean, because even when your teammate scores and you're happy, it's like, oh, I wish that was me that scored. I mean, it's kind of competitive. It's just them, it's not me. So now when they're recognized for their part in the whole process, I mean, it just lifts everybody up. And it's this wonderful little thing. It's not just one person being happy, but one person sharing their happiness and validating and acknowledging, you know, and sharing that. And we can all do that. I mean, think about when the manager, your boss, used your idea, and maybe you were just happy that it got used, but has that ever happened to you? Where they, you know, it's kind of similar to that story I told when I was that summer intern, where they shared the credit with you. And they say, well, this came out of Lena's department, you know, and you get credit for your, you know, for an idea, for a plan, for a process. I mean, we need to do this in our marriages. We need to do it with our kids. Our kids love it when we say, this is something, you know, Lily did. We got this little ornament that she made when she was little that just goes front and center every year, you know, and she just lights up, you know, when we say, oh, well, Lily made that. Those little things we can do in our homes, at our workplaces, that share the credit, in our marriages. I mean, so often we, you know, steal, you know, the credit that doesn't fully belong to just us. And so a lot of little things that add up, and it's why the meek who do these things so well are so wonderful, because they've got a contentment, because they draw on who they are and what they have and what they've accomplished from their relationship with God. And so now it can just overflow and spread into the lives of others. And that's where the inheritance comes back. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Sowing happiness in others' lives will reap an inheritance of a happier world around you. So let me say a little prayer as Keith and the team comes up and tries to drown out all the happiness that's going on over there. So, Lord, thank you for being meek, the real kind of meek, that strength under control for our benefit. Lord, let us learn how to turn around and live that in our lives, that we don't take the credit, that we lift others up, that we involve and include others by flexing with how we've always done things. And Lord, that we can see that happiness grow in our own hearts, Lord, but then grow around us and just lift up everyone around us, where we're all experiencing the joy in our lives that you intend for us to have. And we just pray all this in your name. Well, why don't we stand as Keith leads us in the song, and every Sunday we come to the communion table, and we just invite you, as you're ready, to come into your own time if you wish to make that part of your worship. And our prayer team will be in the back of the room. We would love to pray with anyone that would like to pray.